Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, and we're back. Memorial Day, the long weekend, a sweet memory, the start of summer. What you and we and most Americans did over the weekend probably had something to do, one way or another, with the price of gas. It crested at over $4 a gallon before easing off a little last week. For many Americans, filling the tank, filling the fridge, and taking the kids somewhere this summer is an either-or proposition. This hour on Point, life in a summer of high gas. You can join the conversation. Has the run-up in gas prices dented your family's budget? Are you making trade-offs? Will you be traveling this summer or staying close to home? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from Houston is Ben Lefebvre. He's energy reporter for Dow Jones Newswires. Ben, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
So up to $4 and then a little cresting, a little downturn just in the last week or so. Where does it stand today nationally, the average, Ben?
I think around 360 something, high 360s, depending on where you are.
That's a pretty good dip. What's the forecast?
People are thinking it's going to maybe fall a little further by the end of this month, by the end of June, early July, as oil prices have kind of come down off their highs.
What drove them up, and what might be easing them off now, Ben?
Oil prices were going up as kind of the unrest in the Middle East made some traders afraid that supply might be disrupted, so they bid up the price of oil. As that's kind of come down, so has crude prices. So I think we're seeing crude today, last I saw it was 102. That's down from, like, I think it was high of like 120s or so. That was the high average.
Ben, how much regional variation is there in the price of gas at the pump across the country?
Oh, it's pretty high. We're seeing prices above $4 still on the West Coast in some places and along the East Coast, especially the New York State area. That's down, that's above where, in Houston, I think I'm seeing things in the 360 range in the drive-in today.
Now, you say because of unrest in the Middle East, so oil prices went up, so gas prices went up. Of course, there's been all kinds of complaining and speculation of many kinds as they were high. Here yesterday, this is New York Senator Chuck Schumer. He had a press conference at a gas station in Manhattan, Ben. And as you know, he's been calling for an investigation by the Federal Trade Commission to high gas prices. Some have charged financial speculators with manipulating the price of crude. We'll look at that. But Schumer, here in this tape, he blamed oil refiners.
The FTC needs to take a top-to-bottom, thorough look at this problem. They have to come up with a reason why profits are way up, why refining capacity is only at 80%, and why we're exporting oil when the price is so high.
Couple of things there. Ben Lefebvre, you're in Houston. What about the refiners? How have they been doing in this period of $4 gas?
They've been doing pretty well, but they'll say you have to remember that they were doing very poorly last year at this time. Their profits are way up, but when you compare it to last year, that's way up from almost nothing. So I've heard the exporting complaints as well. And again, the refiners will tell you because unemployment being where it is today, there's more opportunity to sell refined products overseas, especially in Latin America, where Brazil's growing, where Mexico needs more gasoline.
So Schumer's right. American gasoline refiners are exporting their product.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, then they've been exporting product. And again, they'll say it's because it's been harder to sell here. When unemployment's around, 8.8%, I think it is, there's less chance to sell it here.
So, but you would think that the unemployment here, and therefore the sort of sluggish economy, sluggish on many fronts here while it's hotter abroad, mm-hmm. you would think that would hold gas prices down, that would be a damper on pushing those high oil prices through to the American public.
Not necessarily. I mean, with oil where it is, the refiners have to pay for the oil. They can't always, pass prices along, I guess to that extent, to the drivers. Refiners will tell you they're actually, oil is in some places, in some gas stations, a loss leader. They can, sell more money or make a better margin on Coca-Cola mm-hmm. at the gas station than they can on actual gasoline.
What about for the balance of this summer? If it's dipping down toward 360 now, mm-hmm. now I'm seeing some saying it could go back up, others saying it'll stay there, others saying go lower. What's the bottom line?
From what I'm hearing, it could go a little bit lower. I've heard 350 by the end of June, beginning of July, if all, you know, all the issues stay the same as they are today, which, you know, may or may not happen. Also hearing oil may go lower if economic news keeps coming out as kind of weak.
On the other hand, I'm looking here at Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, saying that they expect oil to go back up. This is from today, and they're saying this may actually end up looking back. I mean, you know, prices are I don't know, 30, 40 cents or more higher than last summer, maybe 70 cents higher than last summer. But they're saying in future summers, we may look back on this one, 2011, and say, oh, that was nice cheap gas.
Yeah. In you know, years, times, as economies around the world come, I guess, improve, especially in the U.S., there will be, you know, gas prices pretty much will be going up.
Ben LaFave with Dow Jones Newswire joining us there from Houston. Thank you so much, Ben.
Thank you, Tom.
Joining me now from Washington is Kevin Hall, national economics correspondent for the McClatchy chain of newspapers. He's been reporting on new charges filed last week by the Commodities Future Trading Commission against financial speculators who have been accused of deliberately manipulating the price of oil. And I guess you could say on the backside, maybe gas as well. Kevin, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
These are kind of startling charges that were put last week. $50 million windfall made by this handful of speculators, or I guess manipulators is the right word. What are they alleged to have done, Kevin?
Well, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission alleges that they had controlled the physical market, the actual delivery of oil. So they were playing both in the speculative market and the physical market, which in itself is something that hasn't been spotlighted enough in my mind, that speculators are playing in the physical and the futures markets where they can play each off each other. But they're accused of taking a big position so that it would drive up prices in the futures market. And once they had expectations about future prices, then they bet against the price of oil going up, won a lot of money. They were able to lose their money in their futures because they had raised their prices on the physical market. And so they manipulated it, playing both markets off each other. That's the allegation.
Now, this was back in 2008 when oil was on its way up to that all-time high of $147 a barrel.
Right. It was in springtime on the way up.
And the twist here, as you say, was that they were not just speculating on what it might one day be. They were actually buying and holding, physically holding, millions and millions of barrels of oil.
Right. There's an important distinction that this is manipulation. There's been a lot of written about, and we ourselves have written quite a bit about what's called excessive speculation. And it's kind of like pornography. You can't define it, but you know it when you see it. Right now, about 70% of the futures market, 70 to 80% are speculators, and only 20% to 30% people who physically take delivery of oil. This is the reverse of what's been a decades-long trend. So the question is this excessive, and if so, is it having an influence on price? So the market manipulation is a case where they're actually physically doing, allegedly manipulating the market for gain. But there's a much broader question, which is there a legal form of manipulation going on that is completely legal and is raising the price? And we've tried to outline in a number of stories that we believe it is.
Well, I mean, certainly there's something new going on. You remind us that there was a time not that long ago when end users of oil made up, as you say, 70% of the oil futures market. That is, people who were going to put it into some kind of tank or machine and use it. And now it's financial speculators who comprise about that same portion. So you've got big Wall Street firms right in the middle of this. In effect, a new kind of, I don't know, almost middleman, but they're speculators by definition at the same time.
And they're also involved in the physical markets. That's what's so troubling. People like Morgan Stanley, J.P. Morgan, are now increasingly involved either in tank farms and storage and delivery of either natural gas or oil. I believe J.P. Morgan's very involved in copper. So when you have these, one side of their operation is saying, you know, prices are going to go up, and the other side of it's in the market. This is kind of what happened with mortgage-backed securities in the blow-up of the housing market, where Goldman Sachs is now being accused officially, what my colleague Greg Gordon had reported, where they were selling these things to other people, saying you can't go wrong, these mortgage bonds, and they were betting against it. Well, the same kind of stuff is going on right now in the oil markets.
Now, you know, it's one thing to make $50 million. This is in 08. But if you've got 70% of the oil futures market, $50 million is peanuts.
Peanuts, exactly. And right now, the interesting thing in that case, one of the many interesting things in that case, is the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, if I'm not mistaken, has only had one successful prosecution in its entire history for market manipulation. It's very complicated to prove, and instead people settle, and they pay $50,000. There was one recently where one of the big oil companies, I can't remember whether it was BP or one of the majors, had a $50,000 fine. Well, $50,000 fine is, you know, half an hour's worth of
nothing
of drilling for them. There aren't criminal charges attached to it, and there is a task force now led by the Justice Department that is supposed to look for criminal wrongdoing and try to prosecute it if they can find it. They've met at least two times now. There's not much indication they're doing anything different than what these agencies already do, and it has been the Justice Department that has been reluctant to bring white-collar crime cases.
We've just got half a minute here, Kevin, but of course, if you manipulate the price of oil, I guess, in effect, you manipulate the price of gasoline.
Exactly, because it's the key input in the refining process.
We really appreciate the reporting you've done on this. We want to keep an eye on it and come back to look at not just here, but right across the board in commodities, wheat, corn, you name it, oil, the role that big Wall Street players may be playing in the middle. Kevin Hall with McClatchy Newspapers, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about life in the summer of high gas prices. They crested maybe in the last 10 days, maybe going down some, people say now, but still a lot higher than a year ago, and it has really chewed into family budgets and a whole lot more. We'll look at the recovery, the economic recovery on that front. Joining us right now from Chicago is Diane Swonk, chief economist at Mesirow Financial, a financial services research and consulting firm there, author of The Passionate Economist. Diane Swonk, it's great to have you. Thanks for joining us today.
It's good to be here, Tom.
So there's a lot to look at here, but just first of all, for families, American families, and maybe you can't talk about them all in one big gang these days, but how have these $4 a gallon gas prices factored into family budgets, family behavior?
Well, you know, you really have hit the nail on the head that they're not all the same. Clearly, the high income, the really very upper echelon of income earners, those in New York, those in Boston, we've seen the high end come back and spend conspicuously. And frankly, they don't care what the price of gasoline is, and that hasn't stopped them from spending one iota. And they are spending again with abandon. That said, the rest of America, the bulk of America, has made some serious trade-offs in their spending. Everyone from upper middle income households who are concerned about the sort of whether or not their salaries will stay at current levels. Will they be hit again? Will their wealth be hit again? They still have their home as their largest asset, to middle-income households, low-income households. All those households are having to make some difficult choices in recent months as the price of gas has gone up. In fact, consumption, people have actually stopped driving as much. As of May 20th, we were down 2% on the actual number of gallons of gasoline we were consuming from a year ago. So people actually have cut back on their driving, and that means less discretionary spending. They're not going out to the restaurant, not going out to as many, you know, theaters, things like that. And those are tough choices for many families to make.
Well, no, it really got my attention the first time I'd been driving around, lost track of the gas. It was way down, you know, the light was on. It was nearly on empty. And I went in, and the bill for a one tank of gas was $70. Somehow in my, you know, it's been high because for a while, we all know that. But I still think, oh, you'll stop, you're going to get a tank of gas, it'll be 30, 40, high 40 at the most bucks, $70. That's a chunk in somebody's budget. I mean, does that get beyond restaurant meals? Does that get into tougher choices than that, Diane?
Absolutely, depending on where you are in the income strata. I mean, you know, come on, at the same time, prices of eggs, milk, you know, many of the sort of regular things that we buy at the grocery store have also gone up. And so it's forcing trade-offs at the grocery store as well. And so people are trying to keep both, you know, they're trying to keep their tanks full to go to work, to be able to make a paycheck with those who are working, and at the same time, keep food on their table. And they're having to make trade-offs trade-offs about what they buy. It's harder to buy meat right now because the price of corn has gone up, and that's what we feed meat with. Livestocks are way down, which is pushing up the price of meat. And so all of these things have had a major impact, you know, on both sides of consumer budgets, on the basic necessities of what they buy, which means less discretionary, less fun, more cocooning. Stay at home, you know, order that on-demand movie, get it from Netflix, wherever you're going to get it. But people have the ability to stay at home more and sort of cocoon and not go out, and they certainly are.
Do you buy the, I mean, there's several stories about why they're high right now, gas prices. We've heard about oil and the potential manipulation of oil prices, but also, of course, there's higher demand in other countries, people reaching out for it there. You know, is there a point at which the refiners themselves want to see lower gas prices because Americans stop driving, stop buying, and their net profits fall?
That's certainly something the Saudi Arabians have made a comment on. That said, the Saudis have yet to pick up production for that lost in Libya. It's 3 million barrels a day. And that's really important because, you know, that Libyan production, Libya, Iran, never hit their post, you know, sort of regime change peaks back in the 1970s after they had regime change. And now you've taken offline Libya. You're threatening other oil-producing countries with political instability. And Saudi Arabia initially said that they would go ahead and pick up production. So there's a supply side component to this as well. The problem for many of these oil producing nations is to keep calm in their own backyard. They've offered extraordinary subsidies, Kuwait paying $4,000 per person in subsidy checks so that their population won't rebel and they won't have a problem with a move towards the Arab Spring or democracy. That is a problem because it's raised the floor on how low oil prices can go in these countries, and they can still clear their budgets because they're paying their people off more. It's not because the cost of getting the oil out of the ground is any more, but they're paying their people off so that they won't, you know, have the rioting and the public destruction that they did and the political instability they did in other cases. And we do wonder, how long can that go on? And the Saudis haven't exactly jumped up to the plate and said, hey, we're gonna pick up that production. Initially, they said they would, but we've yet to see it. Promises are rather empty at this stage of the game.
We're getting all kinds of response from our listeners to high gas prices. I mean, some saying, you know, bring it on. Matthew says folks are so much wiser about car purchases, and it's true. Small car prices or sales have been way up. Mass transit, green energy. Jim says, hey, at $4 a gallon, U.S. drivers are still getting the cheapest price the world over. One of the cheaper prices anyway. Let's hear straight from our listeners, Diane. Here's Dana calling from Brockton, Massachusetts. Hi, Dana. You're on the air. How's it hitting you?
Hi. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Yeah. What do you know?
Well, for us, it's sort of been a double whammy because not only is it the high gas prices, but I lost my job in February. And going back to your earlier story, I am the principal breadwinner. My husband's a stay-at-home dad. So we decided back in February to cancel our summer vacation. And we just recently bought an inexpensive pool. Not one of those expensive ones that you have to have installed. It's something my husband's going to put together.
Right.
It cost us a few hundred dollars.
So you'll be in the backyard, not at, I don't know, Disney World or not in the Smoky Mountains.
We usually go away for a week every summer and spend a lot more than what we did on the pool. So my kids are 5 and 6, so at least they'll be able to have fun with Dad in the backyard every day. Hopefully I'll be back at work soon.
Yes, we hope so. Dana, how much of that is about gas? I mean, losing a job puts a real dent in plans, too. How big does gas weigh in here as a factor?
Well, it is. I mean, my kids are in school, and they are on opposite sides of the city, so we have to, you know, drive them to and from school every day, and we try to plan all our errands while we're going down that road, you know, coming back from dropping her off, what errands need to be done on that street, and we're trying to coordinate so we're not doing extra trips.
It
costs $60 to $70 to fill the car.
Yeah, and that's a ding. Dana, I appreciate your call. I mean, Diane, there's good luck with your summer and finding that job, Dana. Diane in Chicago, there's a comment you could repeat millions of times over right now.
Absolutely. The cut down in travel. We've seen it, you know, the big box retailers, the discounters have said fewer people are coming in. And even family restaurants are offering these value price menus with smaller portions because they're dealing with the higher price of the cost of food, but they can't raise the prices because no one will pay for them. They're trying to keep the volume up at their restaurants. The only place where you get some offset is that cocooning, those playing in the backyard with the, you know, with the sprinklers and the pools, the cheaper pools. What we're seeing is also people cocooning more, staying home. And the one thing that tends to be sort of counteractive on this. Even though the price of deliveries goes up, the volume of pizza deliveries goes up so much when the price of gas goes up that that offsets. So they don't tend to charge more. They get a lot more volume. And so you tend to see a lot more pizza deliveries.
Because somebody else does the driving. You don't have to pay to get to the restaurant.
And you know, the volume is so high for the pizza delivery companies, they don't have to charge more in a surcharge. They make it up in volume what they lose in their margins. So I think these are important things. I think it's also important to note that, you know, this is a really tough issue for many families. And as much as it's, it's good that we have, cheaper, more expensive gas to conserve energy. That certainly is the case. Most of the United States does not have access to mass transit like I do here in Chicago. And that really strands a lot of people that are trying to get to their job and they don't have any other choice. Also, many of those smaller cars that are being bought are very expensive cars. They're very high-end cars, starting at $30,000.
Really? The small ones are expensive?
Yes.
Like what? I mean, I thought it was supposed to be, the sort of $20,000 savior.
No. These cars that they're buying out there, it's the high-end buying the small cars. It's kind of like when the Prius first came out. Mm-hmm. It was almost a high conspicuous, a conspicuous consumption thing, and we're seeing very high-end buyers buy those smaller cars. The low-income households are still stuck with the minivans they can't get rid of.
Diane, give us your economist view of what's going on here. How do these gas prices interact with the general state of the economy? I mean, you would think that the growth is low, and the most recent report from the Commerce Department, partly due to those high gas prices, consumer spending was weak, growth down. You would think that that would lower gas prices, but what is the interaction between the overall recovery, if we've still got one, and gasoline prices?
Well, we do have a recovery, but it's still muddling along. It's that sort of sense of being caught in a traffic jam. You know, you're moving forward, but it doesn't feel like it. And every inch you make forward, you just get more angry about it. I think that's kind of the sense a lot of people have about the economy today, especially when you're stuck in that traffic jam, having to pay higher energy prices as well, higher prices at the pump. So, there's no question it takes, I can't even say it takes the icing off the cake because we've yet to get to the dessert of this recovery. We're technically in an expansion. The U.S. economy has hit its pre-crisis level of economic activity, but it's been so uneven in terms of how we've distributed it that the overwhelming majority of Americans are still feeling left behind. And that shows up in the consumer sentiment data, the consumer confidence data. We're still closer to recession lows on confidence in the economy than what we would consider recovery norms.
So high earners spending and spending a lot. High-end restaurants, I'm reading here, are doing quite well, while the family-style
Absolutely.
Ones are the ones in trouble.
Absolutely. And you're also seeing places like Tiffany's doing extremely well. But yet, during the holiday season, they sold a lot of very fine jewelry, the diamonds, the high end stuff, the stuff that I guess Newt Gingrich is buying his wife.
Yeah.
We know he has a
$500,000 credit line. Oh boy.
There you go. But that said, at the rest of the income level, those affinity purchases for a little bit of silver to get that little blue box from Tiffany's during the holiday season didn't happen. And that's because middle and even higher middle income households aren't stretching. They aren't reaching because they don't have that disposable income, or they're worried they won't in the future.
The middle class itself has been under a lot of pressure. Does the higher gas price sort of knock those people out of the quote-unquote middle class, however you want to define that?
Well, I think really the recession revealed a reality that many of us knew but didn't want to admit, and that was income inequalities hit their highest level since 1929 and 2007. And as you got rid of the debt that papered over those income inequalities and allowed people to live at a middle-income standard, they then were pushed down back into lower middle-income or even low-income standards. And that's the reality we have to deal with, and this just adds insult to injury to that income inequality issue. And worries about class warfare and where we're going forward. These are issues that are 40 years in the making, but certainly something like higher energy prices makes it all that sting all that more.
Gas prices can really light them up. Tom in Evansville, Indiana. Tom, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to comment on two of the reasons why we have high oil prices.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we have a situation where the refineries on the Gulf Coast import a lot of foreign crude, which is basically priced in terms of Brent crude. It's higher than West Texas Intermediate.
Yeah.
They process it, and then they look for the highest price market to market their products. And gasoline and diesel are both higher in Europe than they are here. So you're seeing more and more volume from our refineries going to Europe. And in order for the refineries to sell the products of imported crude here, they have to charge a higher price. Now, the other factor that plays in is that a lot, we've discovered a lot of new oil in this country, particularly the Bakken Shale in the Dakotas, but we don't have the pipeline space to get it to Cushing. Cushing is full, which is why oil is cheaper in the heart of the country than it is around the edges.
Tom, you put a lot on the table. Let us pick it up right there, if we may. And surely this is interesting, Diane. I mean, when our economy is soft, our gasoline prices historically lower. Now you've got other parts of the world with higher prices and more growth. Now, I don't know about Europe, but certainly we heard Mexico, Asia, Brazil. I mean, oil is fungible. It can go anywhere. What do you say to Tom's analysis?
That's exactly right. I mean, this is one of the issues that we're dealing with, is that the high energy prices are not a reflection of a strong economy in the U.S., which is unusual. And it is really more a reflection of an external factors. All the external factors he noted, and many more external factors, are pushing up the price of energy. And it's really out of our control. And as a result, it's one of the reasons the Fed isn't as worried about this becoming a vicious cycle of inflation. This is not how they wanted to reinflate the economy. They're very concerned about oil price inflation. But they also realize, because it's external and because wages are constrained and with no credit, these consumers are having to make difficult trade-offs. It's pushing prices down elsewhere in the economy, which is making very uneven inflation and making it even more difficult for many retailers who thought that they were going to be pushing through price increases in April as we were leading up to the Easter holiday, for instance, and oil prices were surging. We saw many retailers who thought they'd be raising prices having to do deep discounts just to keep people coming in the doors. And I think this is a very important concept, is this particular oil shock is very external. The other important issue is, how are we paying for it? We're paying for it with a 2% payroll tax cut that's going to disappear at the end of the year.
You're talking about the one that went through, it's temporary, that was supposed to stimulate the economy. What you're saying, that's essentially just going right into the gasoline pump?
Exactly. In fact, it's very similar to what we saw in the spring of 2008. Remember, we had $150 billion tax rebate then that almost went entirely into fueling, at that time, our own demand for oil and energy. And we saw gas prices soar. We saw the oil, you already noted, the $147 per barrel oil. I think it was on July 7th that hit its peak. Right after that tax rebate went away, we had a recession, and we also had that disappearance of the tax rebate meant nobody could buy the oil anymore, and so it plummeted oil prices. But that was when the U.S. played a larger role in the demand, and these external factors weren't as big.
Kevin in Burlington, Vermont. Hi, Kevin. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty well. What do you know?
Well, you know, for me personally, I work in the city of Burlington, and I've literally moved my family. I lived about 45 minutes outside of Burlington.
Yeah.
I've moved my family about 6 blocks from my job and gotten rid of my vehicles. And my wife and I, we both walk about 20 times as much as we used to.
So, Kevin, maybe this is the green future. Maybe this is exactly what environmentalists and a lot of others have wanted for a long time on the back of these gas prices.
That's kind of how I'm looking at it. You know, I mean, you remember with tobacco, cigarettes, they taxed it, and now people don't really smoke anymore. I go out and, there's a lot less smoking going on. I mean, I understand that I'm an exception and a lot of people have to drive to work and work out in the cuts and stuff like that. But for me personally, I mean, it's been a really positive change in my life, and I feel a lot healthier for it and a lot more eco-friendly. You know, I'm not polluting. I feel good about that. So, you know, that's my personal take on it.
Foot power. Kevin, thanks for your call. Diane, sorry.
Kevin, that's great, and that's really wonderful. Although, you know, one of the biggest problems today is mobility in the U.S. economy has been inhibited by the housing crisis.
Find a job somewhere else.
And afford to move and sell your home short. You know, this whole issue, I mean, housing prices are now, we're in a double dip on housing prices. The Case-Shiller Index showed that housing prices fell 3.6% from a year ago in March. Other housing indices are showing that housing prices are falling again because of the huge backlog of foreclosures on the market. And that's just making it very difficult for people to make that kind of decision, although I commend it.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about summer high gas prices, down over the last week. It may go down some more, but they have been high, and it has hit people. If you make minimum wage in a lot of states, it's been up around a day's labor to fill that tank of gas. Some people have a choice. Some are changing their lifestyles. Some welcome that. Others are stuck. They have no way but to pay the freight. And then comes vacation time. Lots of interesting feedback online. Attila says, drive the big car less and the little car more. Claudia says, way ahead of this last price hike. We bought a Prius 5 years ago. Good for her. Gustavo says, live in a city. No need to worry about gas prices. Jennifer says, my husband rides his motorcycle as his commuting vehicle all summer. Since we live in a very rural area, we only do our grocery shopping once a month. Have to plan well to do that. Robin says, we'll go out less often to dinner, a few fruit and snacks and not so much for the big restaurant. Rachel's looking for a bike for the summer. Kids are staying home. Sam looking into getting a scooter for all but the longest trips. People are making accommodations. Diane Swank is with us from Mesereau Financial in Chicago. It's great to have her with us, author of The Passionate Economist. Joining us right now as well from Lexington, Massachusetts, is Shane Norton, senior consultant in travel and tourism for IHS Global Insight. He was the lead author of the AAA Commission study on Memorial Day travel out last week. Shane Norton, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
So what about the gas prices so far? Have they hit travel, or did people just suck it up and do it over Memorial Day anyway? Do you know yet?
Well, we don't have a lot of information on what specifically happened, but everything we looked into from the surveys we did for people who planned on traveling to what our economists and what our forecasts were saying was that gas prices were going to have a fairly significant impact, both in how much money people have to spend and then in how they're going to spend it.
Can you tell in advance about summer travel plans from airline reservations or you name it? Are people changing their plans on the basis of these recent high gas prices, Shane?
Well, there's certainly an expectation that it's going to be a challenging summer. We had a really strong summer last year that even caught us by surprise a little bit by how quickly people bounced back to pre-recession levels of travel. And it seemed like they all just got off their porch and said, I've sat around for 2 years and now I'm going to go travel. And it'll be difficult to improve on that because while in general things are better than they were last year, the gas prices have certainly cut into a lot of that and are really making people seem like they're thinking twice before they plan a big trip.
What's the tipping point for Americans these days? Is there a number? Was $4 it? I mean, it's back below that again now in most places, but certainly not everywhere yet. But is there a point at which suddenly you see, hey, there just aren't as many people on the roads, people just aren't going anywhere?
Well, $4 is certainly a major tipping point and one that, you know, is unique in that we haven't really crossed that threshold aside from very brief instances before. $3.50, we started to see some changes in terms of driving patterns. You know, we've seen over the past, you know, since the recession started, some changes that, you know, even Diane mentioned, some changes in purchasing from smaller cars. And, you know, regardless of the price points, they are higher fuel efficient cars, but you know, the car park itself, there's so many cars on the road that year-to-year changes don't do a huge dent in terms of what's in everyone's driveway in total. So what we're seeing is we're seeing people spend less money when they travel, and within that smaller budget, they're devoting more of it to gas costs.
So who wins and who loses in this? Does destination travel, they must have been really scared by $4 gas. On the other hand, other places may get people coming to them closer to home that might not have come in the same numbers. What about in the travel business, Shane?
Yeah, well, we're certainly seeing expectations that people are changing some of their behaviors. They're moving away from things that require you to spend a fixed amount of money. Certainly on your entertainment side, we're seeing an uptick in expectations for going to the beach or going to state parks or going to museums and things where you're in a bit more control of how you spend your money and away from things where, you know, the purpose of this trip is shopping or the purpose of this trip is gambling or nightlife, those kind of things where you don't have as much control. You're forced to spend a certain amount of money. And then we're seeing trade downs, as has been mentioned before, of people spending less of their budget on food, where you can tell that they're cutting back on the types of food that they're eating and cutting back on the amount of shopping that they do while they're on that trip because, again, not only is their budget smaller, they're spending more of that on their gas prices.
I've got a Facebook comment here from Bruno. It says, as a taxi operator, I've stopped making any sort of profit. I now shuffle my bills, family of six in parentheses, and I now plan to buy a newer fuel-efficient vehicle. Wish me luck, and we do, Bruno. Here's another listener says, I'm listening to you from Mexico. I was surprised when we went to buy plane tickets this time, a price reduction of almost 40% compared to previous trips. How's the gas price affecting airlines? What about oil and jet fuel and air travel? What about prices there, Shane?
Well, prices had actually stayed relatively flat through most of last year into the beginning of this year on the air travel front. Just recently, they've started to pass through those fuel cost increases to them, because obviously that's a big variable in airline travel. What we haven't seen is an increase or even a change in the number of seats that are out there. Their airlines have been running very few flights as they can over the past year or so, and demand has steadily increased as the economy has improved, but also as the alternative, which is driving your car, has gotten even more expensive. So they've had a little bit more luck recently of pushing those costs down. So if you had planned ahead, you probably got in before this recent price hike. But as you're looking now, you're starting to see some of those price increases add on, and that's above and beyond the changes that have gone on in the travel industry, where you're getting additional extra fees that are tacked on, as well as additional hassles from increased security and such.
High gas prices can show up in all kinds of ways. There's a tweet on Twitter. Joni says, high gas cuts my volunteerism as it costs too much to give my time. I guess if you've got to drive wherever it's going on. Let's get a call from John in Waltham, Massachusetts. John, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just had two quick points. One, I think there was a comment earlier about fuel-efficient vehicles being very expensive, like $30,000. I find that not to be completely untrue, unless you're, maybe the comment was about sort of high-end hybrids or whatnot. If you go to any vehicle, I was actually just on in the market for a vehicle, and the most fuel-efficient are always the cheapest vehicles at any store.
That's what's been selling.
The higher end has been selling.
No,
I guess John. No, what Diane is saying in Chicago that yes, you might find the high mileage, cheaper vehicles, but what's been selling, I guess, is the distinction.
The higher value added ones, and they're absolutely, you can get a very inexpensive, less expensive fuel efficient vehicle. You can also get a very inexpensive Korean vehicle. But what we've seen is the mix in what the automakers have been selling, particularly now that we've had the loss in production related to Japan. Their inventories are very low. Mm-hmm. They're selling the very high-end, very loaded-up fuel-efficient vehicles. Some of these vehicles can park themselves. They talk about them parallel parking themselves. And I was a little surprised by that, but that is what we're getting from the vehicle makers themselves, is that they're actually selling. There are inexpensive ones. There's no question about that. But the ones that have been selling, which could be the mix of buyers, a lot of people who buy vehicles tend to be higher-income households.
Now, John, what do you think about the net effect of higher gas prices so far? Do you think they'll change us in a, positive, negative way? How do you look at it?
Well, I think it's a mixed bag. I mean, my next point was that I do think there's a lot of griping going on, but I think in America we have this culture of entitlement, and it just seems like, you know, oh my goodness, gas prices are so high now, I'm going to have to change my lifestyle, and there's just this extreme resentment against that. But, you know, I occasionally drive to work. I try to bike to work or walk to work. That's just my own personal choice.
Yep.
I think a lot more people can do that. When I do drive, I look, you know, I live in Somerville, and I actually drive out to Waltham, so that's where I am now. And, you know, I mean, the traffic is awful, so I just, you know, I love public transportation for that reason alone. And every car I see, there's one person in it. You know, I mean, there's so many options, carpooling, public transportation. If you're lucky enough to live in a wonderful city like Boston, you can pretty much walk anywhere, you know. So I think basically it's much to do about nothing. So I think the real backlash here is really about, it's more cultural, in my opinion, about people not wanting to change their lifestyles, whereas I've done it much earlier for other reasons, you know, environmental impact, things like that. And I wish, you know, we as a country had done things earlier for better reasons rather than, you know, griping because we have to change what we do.
Hey, John, bravo to you that you've done it, that you've been able to do it. But I have to say, a lot of people do not live in places where it's so easy to make some of these changes. It takes a collective effort and a change in infrastructure, maybe a change of address. And, you know, on the one hand, good you for that on your bike there in the morning. On the other, for people who don't have the option necessarily, it can really pinch. George in Frankfort, Kentucky. You're on the air, George.
Hello, sir.
Hi, what have you seen, George?
I just wanted to make a couple of comments. We traveled down to Gatlinburg, Tennessee this weekend for Memorial Day.
Sure.
And it was amazing. That's one of the vacation points for here in the mountains. And
absolutely,
we were
big draw.
Never stuck in traffic. The lines at the Dollywood Amusement Park were minimal. Our daughter probably spent no more than 5 minutes in any line. There were just no people anywhere. It was actually quite pleasant.
Lucky for you to be there with no lines, no waiting. Come right on in. George, I appreciate your call, but I'm sure Dollywood Shane Norton must not be so happy about it. There's firsthand report on, you know, people staying home.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the benefits to those who do go, you should be able to get some deals. and if this gas price does hold up, that this easing of the prices doesn't come back down as quickly as we might hope, you could certainly see less lines. You know, the expectations from some of the major parks, you know, the public facilities or Disney or Six Flags and such, are that they are expecting a solid year. But the question is, what do they have to do to get that? How much discounting is going to go into effect, and how hard are they going to have to work to match up with last year's visitor totals?
Maybe the summer of the portable blow-up pool, Diane.
Jane, this is Diane. One of the things that I remember happening last year, particularly during during the holiday season, was that the Disneys and the amusement parks were giving very good discounts to people who lived in the immediate area to try to keep, and that really helped to keep their numbers up, mm-hmm. but they gave deep discounts to people who didn't have to travel very far. Is that what we're expecting again this summer, so that those people who live close to the parks can take advantage of them, but it's you know, not as many people traveling into the area, which then hurts the hotels?
What do you say, Shane?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely a likely scenario again, because what we're seeing from the people that we've been surveying and who are intending to travel is that they do in fact plan to travel a lot closer to home, and looking at ways in which they can cut back on that travel cost. And these operators are absolutely intelligent to try and maximize on that. But again, there's always going to be a trade-off involved. And if you don't have to require a hotel stay, then that's a big chunk of money that isn't being brought back from the traveler.
And they're trying to limit those discounts to people who live in their neighborhood so they don't reset their whole price structure. Right. But who knows? Maybe Paul in Omaha, Nebraska. Thanks for calling, Paul. You're on the air.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. Appreciate taking the call.
Yeah.
As I've been listening to the conversation, a couple of things went to my mind, and in particular, I was thinking about having been in business myself for a number of years, is how it changes our shopping patterns and how, you know, our affinity for going to different retailers is changing based upon the cost of driving across town or going to the next town or something.
Well, you think less big box draw if you've got a draw to it, Paul?
Say that again.
Less draw from the big box stores if they're further away. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, we're noticing that we're limiting the number of trips we make. Mm-hmm. We're planning further ahead, and I think retailers need to react to that. I think they need to start thinking in terms of what you were just talking about, the theme parks and some of the vacation places, marketing to their local population more and more. I think the retailers also need to be thinking in terms of, you know, how to make their location advantageous to their local market and not expecting people to drive further and further to reach them.
Yeah, Paul, I appreciate your call. Diane, we saw this report of Walmart announcing it was going to have to raise some prices, and maybe it did some of that, and then turned around and said, no way, that's not working because people weren't buying. So what does that mean?
You know, and they've also announced changes to their strategy, more small box retailers inside cities where people can get to them. I know of cases where some of the big box retailers have had shuttle buses come to deliver the people for free. Walmart has subsidized in some cases people being delivered to their front door so that they can shop there. This is clearly something that the retailers have to deal with, and it's something that, you know, it gets exacerbated. We were talking about, you know, people buying smaller cars, isn't that great? You know, being more fuel efficient. I agree with all that, but you know, the average age of a car on the road now is over 10 years.
Wow.
And we do have a huge pent-up demand in vehicles, and you know, we do need different kinds of infrastructure to allow for more people to go mass transit. It just isn't an option. I mean, here I am in Chicago, and the buses are full, the trains are full, the roads are less congested. That is because of higher energy prices, and we have the option. I have a car that's 2 years old that has 9,700 miles on it. I almost never drive. I take mass transit. That's lucky for me, but I can afford to drive as well. Many people can't. And I think the reality of, you know, many years of decisions about policy in this country, you know, the automakers actually destroyed mass transit in some parts of the country. I'm from Detroit, so I do know this. Unfortunately,
you know,
my father worked for GM, my stepfather worked for Ford.
Yeah,
and, you know, in LA, they actually destroyed mass transit and then they rebuilt it in the area that they destroyed it. I mean, we have to remember we made decisions in this country that was very, conducive to selling cars and consuming gasoline.
Do you see a fundamental change? change? Do you see a fundamental change in the structure of the U.S. economy now that can better weather higher energy prices, that may even embrace them? And how far has that restructuring gone? Because a lot of people are still hollering.
Right. It's not gone far enough. But, you know, clearly we're not consuming as much energy as we once were. We're much less sensitive to higher energy prices than we once were. That's the good news. The good news is we are moving. We're not moving rapidly enough, as many would like, into the green territory. We also remember we have to think about what is green. You know, many of these battery powered cars, we don't know what to do with the batteries when they wear out, how to recycle them. And they're also coming from electricity, which can be also very polluting. The carbon print isn't just the car. It's the overall energy consumption, which I think we need to think more holistically on that as well.
Shane Norton, we've just got half a minute here, but look into the future. Americans have all long thought of, you know, see the USA in your Chevrolet, or when you go on vacation, you go some distance. In an era of maybe higher energy prices, is that over? Are we not going to just zip across the country as lightly anymore, or just drive across it?
I think the lightly part is what's really going to be affected. People will still go. It'll just be the one-time big trip or a bunch of small trips, and you won't see both of those, and you won't see the travel going on a whim anymore.
And the sort of bifurcated economy, high-end, low-end, do you see that in travel as well? High-end travel still going strong while sort of middle-class travel is crimped?
Oh, absolutely. You know, obviously the gas prices affect those in the lower income levels disproportionately. We still see air travel strong, and that favors the higher income travel, longer flights and such. So it is kind of splitting the travelers down the middle.
Well, there's the energy picture at the beginning of summer, or feeling like summer anyway, 2011. Shane Norton with IHS Global Insight, senior consultant there. Thank you so much for being with us this hour, Shane.
Thank you, Tom.
And Diane Swonk in Chicago, chief economist at Mesirow Financial, author of The Passionate Economist. Diane, thank you as always. Wonderful to have you with us today.
Tom.
Listeners, enjoy your summer however you do it. And thanks for being with us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.